Southwest Universe Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. A former U.S. president is hospitalized. Former U.S. President George H.W. Bush, father to former President George W. Bush and current presidential candidate Jeb Bush, is in the hospital after a fall that broke a bone in his neck. A family spokesman says Mr. Bush, now 91 years old, is receiving treatment in Portland, Maine, not far from the Bush family's summer home in Kennebunkport on the northeastern coast of the United States. The spokesman says Mr. Bush is fine and not expected to stay long at the hospital, but will likely wear a neck brace when he comes home. George H.W. Bush served as president from 1989 to 1993. President Barack Obama is strongly defending the historic deal restraining Tehran's nuclear development program, saying it represents the world's best means of ensuring Iran does not get a nuclear weapon. He told the White House news conference Wednesday the pact cuts off every single path for Iran to build an atomic bomb.
It prevents the most serious threat, Iran obtaining a nuclear weapon, which would only make the other problems that Iran may cause even worse.
President Obama faces wide opposition to the pact, mainly from Republicans. Suspected Boko Haram militants have killed at least 45 people in northeastern Nigeria. They are the latest in a series of deadly attacks in the area. The Greek parliament approved a package of tough reforms demanded by the country's creditors in return for a bailout. In a vote taken early this morning in Greece, 229 lawmakers voted in favor, 64 against. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras told lawmakers shortly before the vote that he had no choice but to accept the demanding terms of Greece's creditors. This is VOA News. North and South Korea officials hold talks today aimed at resolving a long-running wage dispute at the Kaesong Industrial Complex, a jointly run factory. The two sides have been mired in a months-long dispute over the North's unilateral move to raise a minimum monthly wage for its workers. South Korea insists that any wage change must be determined through mutual agreement. Mexican troops are being deployed in the municipality of Badiraguato, including roads leading to La Tuna, the birthplace of drug lord Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, as part of an operation to recapture him. Soldiers have set up checkpoints, stopping vehicles and reviewing driver's licenses and registration. Mexican police are also engaged in a larger manhunt in the country, stepping up border security and shutting down an international airport. Guzman managed to escape through a 1.5-kilometer tunnel connecting the shower of his cell to a half-built home in a rural area. Pro-government militiamen in southern Yemen report major gains in the strategic southern port city of Aden, retaking the airport, the port region, and the diplomatic quarter from Houthi rebel fighters. Edward Iranian reports.
Southern militiamen, supported by the Saudi-led coalition, traded fire with Houthi rebel fighters in several districts of the strategic port city of Aden. Witnesses say Houthi fighters have been driven out of key parts of the city, including the port, international airport, and a number of government buildings. A southern commander told Arab media the Houthis had been pushed back on two fronts in the north of Aden and to the east of the city. He indicated fighting was continuing in the southernmost crater district. Edward Uranian, Cairo.
Ugandan Defense Minister Crispus Kayonga is scheduled to arrive in Burundi today to lead discussions aimed at resolving tensions in the country ahead of the rescheduled presidential vote on July 21st. Representatives of the government, opposition, and civil society groups plan to meet the Ugandan minister in a bid to hold talks to find ways of resolving the Burundi crisis. Some opposition and civil society groups reject Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza's controversial re-election bid. The head of the U.S. Central Bank says increased congressional supervision of the Federal Reserve could reduce its independence and hurt the economy. During a contentious hearing of the House Financial Services Committee Wednesday in Washington, Fed Chair Janet Yellen said efforts to further increase transparency could, in her words, undermine the Federal Reserve's ability to make policy in the long-run best interest of American families and businesses. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. President Barack Obama says he's looking forward to his upcoming visit to Kenya.
My hope is that we can deliver a message that the U.S. is a strong partner, not just for Kenya, but for Sub-Saharan Africa generally, build on the progress that's been made around issues of health and education, focus on counterterrorism issues that are important.
We'll look at what the Kenyan capital is doing to prepare for Mr. Obama's visit to that country, the birthplace of his father. An anti-corruption group says foreign timber trade is fueling the violence in the Central African Republic. And Burundi's government says it is pleased so far with Ugandan President Museveni's negotiation.
I think the most positive outcome so far was the fact that both sides have agreed to dialogue. That's number one, and under the facilitation of President Museveni. So there's no doubt that this time around, we have hope that we will deliver.
Alain Nyamitwe is the Burundi's foreign minister. Meanwhile, the opposition said it is also willing to dialogue, but not to take part in next week's presidential election. And we'll tell you the most illegally trafficked mammals. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama says he's looking forward to his upcoming visit to Kenya next week. Speaking Thursday during a lengthy news conference, mostly on the Iran nuclear deal, Mr. Obama said he hopes he can deliver a message that the U.S. is a strong partner, not just for Kenya, but for Africa in general, around issues of health, education, and counterterrorism, especially Al-Shabaab.
With respect to the visit to Kenya, it's obviously something I'm looking forward to. I'll be honest with you. Visiting Kenya as a private citizen is probably more meaningful to me than visiting as president, because I can actually get outside of a hotel room or a conference center. And just the logistics of visiting a place are always tough as president. But it's obviously symbolically important. And my hope is that we can deliver a message that the U.S. is a strong partner, not just for Kenya, but for Sub-Saharan Africa generally, build on the progress that's been made around issues of health and education, focus on counterterrorism issues that are important in East Africa because of Al-Shabaab and some of the tragedies that have happened inside of Kenya, and continue to encourage democracy and the reduction of corruption inside that country that sometimes has held back this incredibly gifted and blessed country.
Mr. Obama also commented on the sexual assault allegations against African-American television personality Bill Cosby by a number of women. First, the president responded to a question whether he is considering withdrawing the Medal of Freedom awarded to Mr. Cosby.
There's no precedent for revoking a medal. We don't have that mechanism. And as you know, I tend to make it a policy not to comment on the specifics of cases where there might still be, if not criminal, then civil issues involved. I'll say this. If you give a woman, or a man for that matter, without his or her knowledge, a drug, and then have sex with that person without consent, that's rape. And I think this country, any civilized country, should have no tolerance for rape.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama speaking during a Thursday news conference at the White House. Kenya's capital, Nairobi, is gearing up for the visit of the country's most famous son, U.S. President Barack Obama. This will be Mr. Obama's first visit to the country of his father's birth since becoming president. And the city is sparing no expense in the preparation. Viewer's Gabe Jaslow has the story from Nairobi.
This is Nairobi's beautification project at work, all part of a major initiative to clean up the city's streets ahead of President Barack Obama's visit later this month. Roads are being repaired, flowers planted, streets painted, and security cameras installed throughout the bustling capital at the expense of the city. Leia Oyake Ombes, chief environment officer for the Nairobi City Council, says the effort is about more than just welcoming one visitor.
I think for Nairobi, and especially as concerns the environmental services, or rather activities that you're currently seeing us doing, at the moment, we are not specifically or primarily doing them for the coming of the American president.
She says many of these improvement plans were already in place, but were fast-tracked ahead of the president's arrival. Still, the people of Nairobi do hope the president will make some pronouncements that will benefit the country and the city.
And therefore, turning such kind of pronouncement into reality or programs are going to start from Nairobi. So Nairobi is like as the springboard of whatever good that will come with the visit.
The city of more than 4 million people faces enormous civic challenges, from congested roads to extreme poverty. It is more than what a little paint can fix.
This is the Nairobi that most Kenyans know. It's busy, chaotic, a little bit messy, and desperately in need of a facelift. While President Obama is unlikely to see this part of the city, residents here say any improvement is a good thing.
As by my thinking, it may be they want to make it clean for the people who are coming to visit the country to see it more clean. But my wish is let them continue to be the way they are just being at the moment. We need it to be clean and more beautiful the way it used to be there before.
For now, they are doing fine because they are making the roads and everything. So I think it's an amazing job that they are doing.
Not everyone is as enthusiastic. Some have said the money spent on the visit could be put to better use.
You see now, like the county commissioner of Nairobi is doing, he's trying to prepare. Those are face show, only face show. Because Ababu is wasting a lot of money. People need money, that money to do, to improve the Mathare area or the Wananchi wako below the average. So they should be given that money to improve their standard.
Mr. Obama is coming to Nairobi in part to attend the Global Entrepreneurship Summit on July 25th. And while his trip will likely be brief, residents of the capital hope the benefits will last long after he's gone. Gabe Josselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Ugandan Defense Minister Crispus Kiyonga is scheduled to arrive in Burundi today, Thursday, to lead discussions aimed at resolving tensions in the country ahead of the July 21st rescheduled presidential vote. Some opposition and civil society groups have said that since they reject Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza's controversial re-election or third-term bid, it was inappropriate for the regional leaders to choose Mr. Museveni as mediator. But Burundian Foreign Minister Alain Nyamitwe tells reporter Peter Clotty that President Museveni is uniquely qualified to help mediate the country's crisis.
So far, the process has been positive. I think the most positive outcome so far was the fact that both sides have agreed to dialogue. That's number one, and under the facilitation of President Museveni. So there's no doubt that this time around, we have hope that we will deliver. The sides will meet again tomorrow under the facilitation of the Minister of Defense of Uganda, who will come and remain here permanently to help us sort out all those unresolved issues here and there.
Some civil society groups and opposition groups have expressed concern that given the 2 weeks window within which President Museveni is supposed to help with the negotiations, it is too short a time to resolve all the issues ahead of the postponed or rescheduled elections. What are your views?
It has never been the case that the signs we have to resolve all the issues before the election. Or they said rather that some of the issues have to be discussed among stakeholders so that the elections are held, I would say, a less tense environment. And that's exactly what has been going on.
Some people have also questioned the choice of President Museveni to be the mediator, especially when they say that he has removed term limit in his country. And here they accuse President Nkurunziza of trying to seek so-called a controversial third term or re-election. They say that, you know, his mediation itself is questionable because of his pedigree in his democratic practice in Uganda. What is your take on that?
Frankly speaking, I don't think there's any serious political activist or even civil society activist who will come with that argument because, number one, whatever the past of President Museveni, we all agree on one or two things about him. Number one, he is an incumbent president of a state, a respected man, stateman in the region. Number two, President Museveni was the key architect of the inter-Burundian talks
in the mid-90s all the way to 2004 and 2005. Nobody had questioned his capacities then. Why should they question his capacities today? For me, there's no doubt about the capacity of President Museveni.
Ali Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Bujumbura. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 16th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. Burundi's opposition Frodebu Nyankuri Party says it is willing to dialogue with the government and other stakeholders about finding solutions to the country's crisis, but not to take part in next week's presidential election. Frodebu Vice President Frederick Mavuga says if President Pierre Nkurunziza goes ahead to have the presidential election on July 21st, the opposition will not participate in what he calls an illegal government. On President Museveni's mediation, Mavuga says the Ugandan leader first blamed the opposition for the Burundian crisis, but changed his tune to call for more dialogue after recognizing the seriousness of the crisis.
Yesterday, we met the President Museveni, and for the first day, he tried to show how the opposition was the problem of the country. Because he said that he entered in Burundi from the north of the country, and he came here in Bujumbura, and he met people who were wanting to vote for the president. And he said that only the opposition would like to not have elections. But today, he changed the tone by saying that, you know, things are going on the ground is very, very critical, meaning that for him, we have to sit together to have talks among Burundians. And he said that everything must be discussed, including the problem of the third term of President Nkurunziza.
Are you willing to sit down to talk with President Nkurunziza or the ruling CNDD-FDD party? Remember, the presidential election are scheduled for next week.
Yes. For Museveni, he said that when, for example, the summit decisions are there, it is not possible to ignore that decision. He said that people, leaders who ignored such decisions, or you don't know where they are today. And he gave us an example of Mobutu Sese Seko, the former president of Congo, meaning that for Burundians, for President Nkurunziza, he have to understand that he must take into account the decisions of the summit.
Again, let me repeat the question. Is the opposition willing to sit and discuss with the Burundian government? And what is it that you are going to be talking about?
Yeah, we are. Our opposition is willing to discuss with the government. The problem is that the current government is, you don't know if it's willing to discuss with the opposition. We are ready to discuss with them.
Are you willing to take part in the presidential election next week?
No, it is not possible because the last summit of Dar es Salaam asked us to not to go to participate to the elections. What is asked us is to participate to negotiation here in Bujumbura.
So if you do not take part in the election, would you be discussing to participate in any government that is formed by Nkurunziza after the election?
No, we cannot participate to those elections. This is the first thing. The second thing, if he goes alone to those elections, we cannot participate to his government because what is important for us is not to participate to any government. What is important for us is to sit together to discuss any issue that is obstacle to any elections which are free, which are fair, which are peaceful.
Frederick Mavuga is the vice president of opposition Frodebu Nyankuri Party of Burundi. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. Anti-corruption group Global Witness says European timber imports from the Central African Republic have helped fund violence in the country. It also accuses French, Chinese, and Lebanese timber companies of paying bribes to the Seleka rebels and other armed groups. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
Published Wednesday, the new Global Witness report says that in 2013 alone, logging companies paid more than $3.7 million to the Seleka rebels fighting in Central African Republic so that they could continue their timber operations. After the rebels were ousted from power in 2014, the companies paid hundreds of thousands more dollars to rival militia groups. Global Witness cited three logging companies it says made many of the payoffs: Vicwood from China, Sevka from Lebanon, and French group IFB. Global Witness campaign leader Alexandra Pardell.
By agreeing to pay those armed men, the logging companies became complicit in their crimes. Let's be clear about this. These are crimes that they also became involved in. They could foresee that the money that they paid would go to buy arms and kill Central African people. That is unacceptable and it is also illegal.
French company Tropica Bois was also cited in the report. Global Witness says it is CAR's biggest timber trader, which reaped record profits in 2013 at the height of the CAR conflict. The company's office in Nice did not immediately respond to an interview request. The report also faults the European Union, whose member states collectively amount to the top importers of CAR timber, despite EU regulations against the illegal timber trade. More broadly, Pardell says, Global Witness wants a moratorium on industrial logging operations in Central African Republic and for countries to crack down on the illegal timber imports. This is not the first Global Witness investigation into the regional logging industry. A June report accused European and U.S. companies of participating in an illegal and lucrative timber trade in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. 2 years ago, the CAR and five other African countries, along with timber industry representatives, agreed to jointly fight the illegal trade of timber and logging in the Congo Basin. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Have you ever heard of pangolin? A lot of people haven't. It's also known as a scaly anteater. Conservation group says it is the world's most illegally trafficked mammal. The U.S. government is being asked to designate seven species as endangered. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
Born Free USA's Rosalind Morrison says pangolins once occupied large areas of Asia and sub-Saharan Africa.
Pangolins are indeed the most threatened mammals in the world right now, and there are eight species in the world. They're four in Asia and four in Africa. They are mammals, and they're covered in scales from their head to their tail, and the scales are made of keratin, which is the same ingredient that's in our nails.
Born Free USA and others are asking that seven of the eight pangolin species be protected under the U.S. Endangered Species Act. One already has been listed as endangered.
They're basically endangered because parts of Asia and parts of Africa believe that their scales have medicinal value. And so they're highly sought after for their scales and their meat, which is considered a delicacy in many different countries in Asia and Africa.
China and Vietnam are the biggest markets for illegal pangolin products, as they are for ivory and rhino horns.
Even though they're so endangered, most people don't even know they exist. They could go extinct before people even heard about them. And the reason most people haven't heard about them is they're nocturnal. They're highly elusive, so it's extremely hard for scientists to come across them in the wild. And they can't be bred in captivity. Rarely any, if any, exist in zoos. I think there are about three in zoos worldwide.
Morrison says their populations are falling fast.
We have found that more than 960,000 pangolins were illegally traded over the past decade. So when you compare those numbers to elephants and rhinos, it is a much, much, much larger scale.
There is a market in the U.S. for illegal pangolin products. Getting the mammals included in the Endangered Species Act would ban the import and sale of the animals or their parts. Morrison says it would also heighten awareness about the mammal with the very long, sticky tongue. She says loss of the pangolins could damage ecosystems.
They regulate insects. They eat ants and termites. So if we lose pangolins, there would be a cascading effect on the ecosystem.
Born Free USA is joined in petitioning the U.S. government by the Center for Biological Diversity, Humane Society International, the Humane Society of the United States, and the International Fund for Animal Welfare. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with cricket. Kenya beat the United Arab Emirates by 42 runs at the 2016 ICC 2020 World Cup qualifiers in Edinburgh, Scotland on Wednesday. Kenya lies second in Group B preliminaries with 7 points. Today, Thursday, Namibia play Jersey. Namibia is third in Group A with 3 points. 14 teams equally divided into two groups are vying to play at the ICC 2020 World Cup in India next year. In football, Sunday Ogochukwu Olise has been appointed the new Nigeria Super Eagles head coach for the next 3 years, the Nigeria Football Federation head Amaju Pinnick revealed in Abuja, Nigeria on Wednesday. He'll be assisted by Belgian Jean-Francois Losiuto, local Salisu Yusuf and goalkeeper coach Aloy Agu. Olise's first order of business is to qualify Nigeria for the 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations due in Gabon. Meanwhile, Egypt hosts Uganda in the Africa Under-23 Championship qualifiers in Cairo on Saturday. Gabon play Mali, Zimbabwe engage South Africa, Algeria meet Sierra Leone, Nigeria play the Republic of Congo, Morocco face Tunisia as Ivory Coast encounter Zambia. In Switzerland, the Republic of Congo is the most improved Africa women's national football team, while Zimbabwe has slipped by the widest margin according to the latest FIFA rankings released in Zurich. Placed 29th, African champions Nigeria Super Falcons are the top-ranked African side. Cameroon is 43rd, Ghana 52nd, Equatorial Guinea 55th, South Africa 59th, Ivory Coast 67th, Algeria 79th, Morocco 81st, Tunisia 82nd, and Egypt 89th. Finally, in athletics, a glimpse at the next generation of Africa's top athletes will begin to emerge as the IAAF World Youth Athletics Championships enters its second day of action in Cali, Colombia today, Thursday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A group of human rights organizations has urged U.S. President Barack Obama to use his upcoming trip to Kenya to press the government there to improve its human rights record. Human Rights Watch released a letter Wednesday on behalf of 17 rights organizations. The letter said the organizations are concerned that Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is undermining Kenya's constitution and its commitment to international human rights law under the pretext of promoting national security and combating terrorism. And suspected Boko Haram militants have killed at least 45 people in northeastern Nigeria, the latest in a series of deadly attacks in the area. That is it for this Thursday, July 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing bribery, an issue of concern all over the world. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC. Right here on VOA Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz, We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.